Welcome to the Deep Dive. We take the most interesting and important knowledge from complex sources so you can become well-informed without getting lost in the weeds.
Think of it as your express route to understanding what really matters.
Today, we're plunging into, well, a pretty fascinating intersection of probability and statistics, specifically how we analyze random events.
That's right. And we heard from you, our listener, about wanting to get a handle on complex systems, you know, maybe get those aha moments without wading through super dense info.
Exactly. And today we've got quite a source. It's a mathematical paper, actually. Multidimensional Stein method and quantitative asymptotic independence.
Okay, yeah. Published in the Transactions of the American Mathematical Society. Sounds a bit intense, maybe.
It does sound intense, but the core ideas, I think, are surprisingly insightful once you unpack them.
So our mission today for this deep dive is to really get into a key question from this paper.
Which is?
How can random things, things that might even seem related somehow, actually become completely independent? Mathematically speaking, that is, especially when we look at them in the long run, in the limit.
Okay, independence in the limit. And what tools do mathematicians use?
Exactly. What tools do they use to not just prove this happens, but also to like measure how independent they become? Quantify it.
Right, quantify it. Okay, so let's dive in. The paper starts with a fundamental problem, doesn't it?
It does. It asks, how different is the joint behavior of two random variables, let's call them X and Y.
Okay, X and Y together.
Compared to a situation where X is replaced by Z, where Z is like a perfectly random Gaussian variable.
The classic bell curve type.
Yep, and crucially, Z acts completely independently of Y. So measuring that difference, XY versus ZY, where Z is Gaussian and independent.
And this is where Stein's method comes in. I've heard of that.
You have. It's a whole collection of techniques, really, a specialized toolkit for measuring distances between probability distributions.
Specifically when one of them is Gaussian.
It's particularly powerful there, yeah. When the target is that normal distribution, it actually started with a really important paper by Charles Stein.
Ah, okay. And it's been developed since then.
Oh, yeah, quite a lot. Which leads us to something maybe a bit newer, Stein-Mallevin calculus.
Okay, Stein-Mallevin, that sounds like a combination.
It is. It merges Stein's method with Mallevin calculus. Now, Mallevin calculus, it sounds complicated, and, well, it can be, but the core idea is it lets you do calculus-like things, like taking derivatives, but for random variables.
Huh. How does that work? Differentiating randomness.
It's about seeing how sensitive a random outcome is to the underlying noise that generates it. It's pretty powerful.
So Stein-Mallevin uses these Mallevin derivatives.
Yes, exactly. It uses these derivatives and another tool called the Ornstein-Uhlenbeck operator to put bounds on the distances between distributions.
And this is where the fourth moment theorem fits in.
Spot on. The fourth moment theorem is a really key result here. It basically says, look, if you have a sequence of random variables built in a certain way, we'll get to.
Okay.
And you want to know if it's going to behave like a normal distribution in the limit.
Converge to Gaussian.
Right. You don't necessarily need to look at the whole distribution. You just need to check a few things.
Like what?
Like whether their fourth moments converge to the right value, which is 3 for a standard normal.
Okay. The fourth moment. That tells you about the peakiness or tails.
Sort of, yeah. And also, critically, how their Mallevin derivatives behave, if those things check out, convergence is guaranteed. It's quite remarkable.
Wow. Okay. So it gives you practical criteria.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Now, this paper we're looking at uses a specific variant of Stein's method.
Tailored for this independence question.
Precisely. Tailored to measure the distance between our pair, XY, and the pair, ZY, where Z is that independent Gaussian replacement for X.
And what's the core idea there?
It's actually quite neat. They define a specific mathematical operator. If you apply this operator to some function of X and Y, and the average result, the expectation, is close to zero.
Expectation close to zero, too.
Then that's strong evidence that X is close to being Gaussian and independent of Y.
Ah, so that operator failing to produce much signal, on average, means X is behaving itself independently.
You got it. That's the intuition.
Then the paper talks about a multidimensional Stein's equation.
Yes. This is a specific equation linked to that operator. The important thing is that it has a unique solution. And crucially, that solution and its derivatives are bounded. They don't blow up.
And why are the bounds on the derivative so important?
Because those bounds directly translate into the numerical limits, the quantitative bounds on how far apart the distributions are. They let you put a number on the distance.
Okay, and the way they measure this distance is the Wasserstein distance.
That's the one they focus on, yes. The Wasserstein distance. Think of it, maybe, like you have two piles of sand representing your two probability distributions. The Wasserstein distance is like the minimum cost or effort to rearrange one pile to look exactly like the other.
Ah, okay. How much earth moving you need to do?
Kind of, yeah. It's based on optimal transport, really. And it's good for functions that are, you know, relatively smooth, Lipschitz continuous.
Got it. So this leads to the first big result, Theorem 1.
Yes. Theorem 1 pulls these pieces together. It gives a concrete upper bound on that Wasserstein distance.
The distance between x, y, and z, y.
Exactly. And the bound is given in terms of those Malleev operators applied to x and y.
And what's the key implication?
Well, one really interesting part is what happens if a specific Malleevian term, which sort of measures the covariance or relatedness between X and Y in this Malleevian sense, goes to zero.
If that term is zero.
You're close to zero. It strongly implies that X and Y are becoming independent or already close to independent alongside X becoming Gaussian.
Okay, so that Malleevian term is like a key indicator for independence in this framework.
It plays a crucial role, yes. Now, after setting up this general machinery, the paper zooms in on a specific setting. Wiener chaos.
Wiener chaos. Yeah. Okay, sounds chaotic.
Huh. Yeah, the name is a bit dramatic, but it's actually a very structured way to build complex random variables.
How so?
You start with some basic Gaussian noise, like Brownian motion maybe, or more generally an isonormal process.
Yeah.
And then you build more complicated random variables by taking multiple stochastic integrals.
Okay, integrals with respect to the randomness.
Exactly. Repeatedly. Think of it like layers of complexity built purely from randomness. The first chaos is basically Gaussian. The second chaos involves double integrals and so on.
Okay, so it's a hierarchy.
A hierarchy, yes.
Yeah.
And within this specific structure, they revisit the fourth moment theorem. That's theorem 2 in the paper.
Right, the one connecting convergence to Gaussian with moments and derivatives.
Yes. Here, it's stated specifically for a sequence of random variables living in a fixed Wiener chaos, say the Pth chaos.
Okay.
And it confirms that for such a sequence to converge to a standard normal distribution, several things are equivalent.
Equivalent, meaning if one happens, they all happen.
Exactly. Convergence in distribution is equivalent to convergence of the fourth moments to three.
Okay.
Which is also equivalent to the convergence of something called the contractions of the kernels. These kernels are like the blueprints for building the variable in the chaos.
Ah, so the structure simplifies in the right way.
Kind of, yes. And finally, that's also equivalent to the convergence of the squared Malleevian derivative to the variance, which is 1 for a standard normal.
Wow. So multiple angles confirming the same thing. That sounds really useful for proofs.
It's incredibly useful. It's a cornerstone for proving the main results on asymptotic independence, which brings us to Theorem 3.
Okay, the main event on independence in Wiener chaos. Let's break it down.
All right, so imagine you have a sequence, xk. Each xk is in the Pth Wiener chaos, and p has to be 2 or more, so not just Gaussian.
Okay, order 2 or higher.
And this sequence xk is converging in distribution to a standard Gaussian z as k gets large.
So xk is becoming Gaussian.
Got it. Now we also have another sequence, yk. This can be a vector. And its components have some technical properties. They're in a space called D12 related to Malleevian derivatives.
Okay, some regularity conditions.
Right. And there's a specific condition on how yk is built from the different chaos levels, equation 19 in the paper. Let's not get too bogged down in that detail for now.
Right. Assume yk is reasonably well behaved.
And suppose yk converges too, maybe just in L2 sense, to some limiting random vector y. Y doesn't have to be Gaussian.
Okay, xk goes to Gaussian z, yk goes to some y. What else?
The final crucial ingredient, xk and yk become asymptotically uncorrelated. Their correlation goes to zero as k increases.
Oh, okay. They stop being correlated in the usual sense.
The conclusion. The joint pair, xk, yk, converges in distribution.
To what?
To the pair z, y, where z is the Gaussian limit of xk, y is the limit of yk, and z and y are independent.
Wow. So the asymptotic uncorrelation plus the convergence of sk to Gaussian is enough to force asymptotic independence in this Wiener chaos setting.
For chaos order 2 or higher, yes. And they even give a quantitative bound again using Wasserstein distance in equation 23. It tells you the rate of convergence to this independent state.
That's pretty powerful. What about those technical conditions on Yorkie? Are they very restrictive?
Actually, the paper notes, they're often satisfied automatically. For instance, if Uyck is just made up of a finite sum of components from different Wiener chaoses, it works.
Okay.
Or even if Yaki doesn't change at all, if Yaki is just fixed as Y for all K, that works too.
So it's quite broadly applicable within this framework. What's the intuition? Why does this independence pop out?
Well, the authors connect it back to those contractions of kernels we mentioned for the fourth moment theorem.
The blueprints of the chaos variables.
Right. As XK converges to Gaussian, these internal structural components, these kernels, interact in a way that effectively decouples them from other things, like Yaki.
So the internal structure becoming Gaussian-like also makes it independent-like.
That's a good way to put it, yeah. It relates to fundamental independence properties of multiple stochastic integrals themselves.
You mentioned dilemma 5 as well.
Yes, a technical lemma, but important for the proofs. It basically shows that as XK gets closer to Gaussian, its kernel contractions with any fixed function become vanishingly small.
So XK stops correlating structurally with anything fixed.
Exactly. That helps prove the decoupling from Yaki.
Okay, so stepping back, what are the big picture implications here? Where might this be used?
Well, definitely in statistics and probability theory itself for proving other limit theorems.
Mm-hmm.
But think about statistics where your estimators, the things you calculate from data, can actually be represented as multiple stochastic integrals, as elements of a Wiener chaos.
Okay, that happens in some areas.
Oh, yes, especially in areas dealing with long-range dependence or stochastic processes. This theory can tell you about the limiting distribution of your estimator and whether it becomes independent of other relevant random quantities.
That sounds useful. Do they give concrete examples?
They do, which really helps make it less abstract. First, they look at Hermite variations of correlated fractional Brownian motions.
Fractional Brownian motion. That's the one with memory or long-range dependence, right? Governed by the Hurst parameter H.
Exactly. So you take two fractional Brownian motions, maybe with different Hurst parameters, H1 and H2, and you look at certain functions of them related to Hermite polynomials.
Okay.
The theorem can predict when these two functional variations will become asymptotically independent. It depends crucially on the values of H1, H2, and the orders of the Hermite polynomials involved.
So it gives precise conditions for independence based on the underlying roughness and the function you apply.
Precisely. It explains some known results and provides a deeper mechanism.
Cool. What other examples?
They look at a case with an infinite chaos expansion.
Whoa. Okay. Infinite integrals.
Essentially, yeah. Imagine one sequence XK related to fractional Brownian motion converging to Gaussian, and the other variable Y is fixed, but it's intrinsically complex, like the exponential of a Gaussian variable, which involves all levels of Wiener chaos.
Okay, so Y has infinite complexity in this chaos sense.
Right, and yet the theorem still shows that XK and Y become asymptotically independent. And again, they provide a quantitative rate using the Wasserstein distance.
So the theory handles infinite chaos, too. That's impressive.
It highlights how the decay of correlations within XK as it becomes Gaussian is the dominant factor driving independence.
Any more?
One more, illustrating a central non-central limit theorem.
Central non-central.
Yeah. So you have a two-dimensional sequence, XK, YK, in Wiener chaos. XK, the first component, converges to a standard normal Z, the central part.
Okay.
But YK, the second component, converges to something non-Gaussian. In their example, it's a Rosenblatt distribution, which can happen for certain chaos structures and Hurst parameters, the non-central part.
Ah, so one goes Gaussian, one doesn't. Do they still become independent?
Yes. Theorem 3 still applies. As long as XK, order 2 or higher, goes to Gaussian, and they become uncorrelated, they become asymptotically independent, even though YK has a non-standard limit.
Okay, that really shows the power. It decouples the Gaussian component, regardless of what the other component is doing, as long as they uncorrelate.
Exactly. And again, quantitative bounds are provided. The Hurst parameter plays a role in the convergence of YK here, too.
And you mentioned stochastic differential equations briefly.
Just a brief mention at the end, yeah. Suggesting these tools might be useful for analyzing the long-term dependence between, say, the solution path of an SDE and the noise that drives it.
Which could be very hard to calculate directly.
Could be, yeah. So this offers a potential indirect route via asymptotic independence.
Okay, let's try to sum this up then. What's the main takeaway message from this deep dive?
I think the core insight is pretty surprising, actually. If you have sequences in Wiener chaos, particularly order 2 or higher,
right,
and they are converging towards a Gaussian distribution, they kind of automatically want to become independent from other well-behaved random variables.
Especially if they're becoming uncorrelated anyway.
That's the key condition, yeah. Asymptotic uncorrelation plus convergence to Gaussian within this structure leads to asymptotic independence.
And the Stein-Malievin calculus isn't just proving this happens. It's giving us the tools to measure how fast it happens.
Exactly. It provides quantitative rates of convergence via things like the Wasserstein distance. It's much more precise than just saying they become independent eventually.
It feels like one of those unexpected consequences of mathematical structure.
It really does. It reveals something deep about how Gaussianity and independence are linked within these specific random structures. It's significant for advanced probability, stochastic analysis, and potentially statistics dealing with complex random stuff.
So here's a final thought for you, the listener, to ponder. Where else might this happen?
Right. This idea of seemingly connected things decoupling and becoming independent in the long run. Could we see analogous behavior in real-world complex systems?
Like maybe in financial markets, long-term dependencies fading, or in physics, or climate modeling, or even biology.
It's definitely interesting to think about where similar principles of asymptotic independence might emerge, even if the underlying math isn't exactly Wiener chaos. Something to mull over.
Definitely food for thought. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive.